Chapter 31. They rise from the council, detain both, and entreat that they do not bring the matter into the greatest jeopardy by their dissension and obstinacy. The affair was an easy one, if only they all thought and approved of the same thing, whether they remain or depart. On the other hand, they saw no security in dissension. The matter is prolonged by debate until midnight. At last, Cotta, being overruled, yields his consent. The opinion of Sabinus prevails. It is proclaimed that they will march at daybreak. The remainder of the night is spent without sleep, since every soldier was inspecting his property, to see what he could carry with him, and what, out of the appurtenances of the winter quarters, he would be compelled to leave. Every reason is suggested to show why they could not stay without danger, and how that danger would be increased by the fatigue of the soldiers and their want of sleep. At break of day, they quit the camp, in a very extended line and with a very large amount of baggage, in such a manner as men who were convinced that the advice was given by Ambiorix, not as an enemy, but as most friendly towards them. Chapter 32. But the enemy, after they had made the discovery of their intended departure by the noise during the night and their not retiring to rest, having placed an ambuscade in two divisions in the woods, in a suitable and concealed place, 2 miles from the camp, waited for the arrival of the Romans. And when the greater part of the line of march had descended into a considerable valley, they suddenly presented themselves on either side of that valley, and began both to harass the rear and hinder the van from ascending, and to give battle in a place exceedingly disadvantageous to our men. Chapter 33. Then at length Titurius, as one who had provided nothing beforehand, was confused, ran to and fro, and set about arranging his troops. These very things, however, he did timidly and in such a manner that all resources seemed to fail him, which generally happens to those who are compelled to take counsel in the action itself. But Cotta, who had reflected that these things might occur on the march, and on that account had not been an adviser of the departure, was wanting to the common safety in no respect. Both in addressing and encouraging the soldiers, he performed the duties of a general, and in the battle, those of a soldier. And since they, Titurius and Cotta, could less easily perform everything by themselves, and provide what was to be done in each place, by reason of the length of the line of march, they ordered the officers to give the command that they should leave the baggage and form themselves into an orb. Which measure, though in a contingency of that nature it was not to be condemned, still turned out unfortunately, for it both diminished the hope of our soldiers and rendered the enemy more eager for the fight, because it appeared that this was not done without the greatest fear and despair. Besides that happened, which would necessarily be the case, that the soldiers for the most part quitted their ensigns and hurried to seek and carry off from the baggage whatever each thought valuable, and all parts were filled with uproar and lamentation. Chapter 34. But judgment was not wanting for the barbarians, for their leaders ordered the officers to proclaim through the ranks that no man should quit his place, that the booty was theirs, and for them was reserved whatever the Romans should leave. Therefore let them consider that all things depended on their victory. Our men were equal to them in fighting, both in courage and in number, and though they were deserted by their leader and by fortune, yet they still placed all hope of safety in their valor, and as often as any cohort sallied forth on that side, a great number of the enemy usually fell. Ambiorix, when he observed this, orders the command to be issued that they throw their weapons from a distance and do not approach too near, and in whatever direction the Romans should make an attack, there give way, from the lightness of their appointments and from their daily practice, no damage can be done to them, but pursue them when betaking themselves to their standards again. Chapter 35. Which command having been most carefully obeyed, when any cohort had quitted the circle and made a charge, the enemy fled very precipitately. In the meantime, that part of the Roman army, of necessity, was left unprotected, and the weapons received on their open flank. Again, when they had begun to return to that place from which they had advanced, they were surrounded both by those who had retreated and by those who stood next to them. But if, on the other hand, they wished to keep their place, neither was an opportunity left for valor, nor could they, being crowded together, escape the weapons cast by so large a body of men. Yet, though assailed by so many disadvantages, and having received many wounds, they withstood the enemy, and a great portion of the day being spent, though they fought from daybreak until the 8th hour, they did nothing which was unworthy of them. At length, each thigh of T. Balventius, who the year before had been chief centurion, a brave man and one of great authority, is pierced with a javelin. Q. Lucianus, of the same rank, fighting most valiantly, is slain while he assists his son when surrounded by the enemy. L. Cotta, the lieutenant, when encouraging all the cohorts and companies, is wounded full in the mouth by a sling. Chapter 36. Much troubled by these events, Q. Titurius, when he had perceived Ambiorix in the distance encouraging his men, sends to him his interpreter, Cn. Pompey, to beg that he would spare him and his soldiers. He, when addressed, replied that if he wished to confer with him it was permitted, that he hoped what pertained to the safety of the soldiers would be obtained from the people, that to him, however, certainly no injury would be done, and that he pledged his faith to that effect. He consults with Cotta, who had been wounded, whether it would appear right to retire from battle and confer with Ambiorix, saying that he hoped to be able to succeed respecting his own and the soldiers' safety. Cotta says he will not go to an armed enemy, and in that perseveres. Chapter 37. Sabinus orders those tribunes of the soldiers whom he had at the time around him, and the centurions of the first ranks, to follow him. And when he had approached near to Ambiorix, being ordered to throw down his arms, he obeys the order and commands his men to do the same. In the meantime, while they entreat upon the terms, and a longer debate than necessary is designedly entered into by Ambiorix, being surrounded by degrees, he is slain. Then they, according to their custom, shout out victory and raise their war cry, and, making an attack on our men, break their ranks. There El Cotta, while fighting, is slain, together with the greater part of the soldiers. The rest betake themselves to the camp from which they had marched forth, and one of them, L. Petrosidius, the standard-bearer, when he was overpowered by the great number of the enemy, threw the eagle within the entrenchments, and is himself slain while fighting with the greatest courage before the camp. They with difficulty sustain the attack till night, despairing of safety, they all to a man destroy themselves in the night. A few escaping from the battle make their way to Labienus at winter quarters, after wandering at random through the woods, and inform him of these events. Chapter 38. Elated by his victory, Ambiorix marches immediately with his cavalry to the Aduatuci, who bordered on his kingdom. He halts neither day nor night, and orders the infantry to follow him closely. Having related the exploit and roused the Aduatuci, the next day he arrived among the Nervi, and entreats that they should not throw away the opportunity of liberating themselves forever, and of punishing the Romans for those wrongs which they had received from them. He tells them that two lieutenants have been slain, and that a large portion of the army has perished, that it was not a matter of difficulty for the legion which was wintering with Cicero to be cut off, when suddenly assaulted. He declares himself ready to cooperate in that design. He easily gains over the Nervi by his speech. Chapter 39. Accordingly, messengers having been forthwith dispatched to the Centrones, the Grudii, the Livaci, the Plumoxi, and the Geduni, all of whom are under their government, they assemble as large bodies as they can, and rush unexpectedly to the winter quarters of Cicero, the report of the death of Titurius not having as yet been conveyed to him. That also occurred to him, which was the consequence of a necessary work, that some soldiers who had gone off into the woods for the purpose of procuring timber and therewith constructing fortifications were intercepted by the sudden arrival of the enemy's horse. These having been entrapped, the Eburones, the Nervi, and the Aduatuci, and all their allies and dependents, began to attack the legion. Our men quickly run together to arms and mount the rampart. They sustained the attack that day with great difficulty, since the enemy placed all their hope in dispatch, and felt assured that, if they obtained this victory, they would be conquerors forever. Chapter 40. Letters are immediately sent to Caesar by Cicero, great rewards being offered to the messengers if they carried them through. All the passes having been beset, those who were sent are intercepted. During the night, as many as 120 towers are raised with incredible dispatch out of the timber which they had collected for the purpose of fortification. The things which seem necessary to the work are completed. The following day, the enemy, having collected far greater forces, attack the camp and fill up the ditch. Resistance is made by our men in the same manner as the day before. This same thing is done afterwards during the remaining days. The work is carried on incessantly in the night. Not even to the sick or wounded is opportunity given for rest. Whatever things are required for resisting the assault of the next day are provided during the night. Many stakes burnt at the end, and a large number of mural pikes are procured. Towers are built up, battlements and parapets are formed of interwoven hurdles. Cicero himself, though he was in very weak health, did not leave himself the nighttime for repose, so that he was forced to spare himself by the spontaneous movement and entreaties of the soldiers. Chapter 41. Then these leaders and chiefs of the Nervii, who had any intimacy in the grounds of friendship with Cicero, say they desire to confer with him. When permission was granted, they recount the same things which Ambiorix has related to Titurius. Namely, that all Gaul was in arms, that the Germans had passed the Rhine, that the winter quarters of Caesar and of the others were attacked. They report in addition also about the death of Sabinus. They point to Ambiorix for the purpose of obtaining credence. They are mistaken, say they, if they hoped for any relief from those who distrust their own affairs. That they bear such feelings towards Cicero and the Roman people that they deny them nothing but winter quarters and are unwilling that this practice should become constant. That through there, the Nervii's means, it is possible for them, the Romans, to depart from their winter quarters safely and to proceed without fear into whatever parts they desire. To these, Cicero made only one reply, that it is not the custom of the Roman people to accept any condition from an armed enemy. If they are willing to lay down their arms, they may employ him as their advocate and send ambassadors to Caesar. That he believed, from his, Caesar's, justice, they would obtain the things which they might request. Chapter 42. Disappointed in this hope, the Nervii surround the winter quarters with a rampart 11 feet high and a ditch 13 feet in depth. These military works they had learnt from our men in the intercourse of former years, and, having taken some of our army prisoners, were instructed by them. But as they had no supply of iron tools which are requisite for this service, they were forced to cut the turf with their swords, and to empty out the earth with their hands and cloaks, from which circumstance the vast number of the men could be inferred. For in less than 3 hours they completed a fortification of 10 miles in circumference, and during the rest of the days they began to prepare and construct towers of the height of the ramparts, and grappling irons, and mantlets, which the same prisoners had taught them. Chapter 43. On the 7th day of the attack, a very high wind having sprung up, they began to discharge by their slings hot balls made of burnt or hardened clay, and heated javelins upon the huts, which, after the Gallic custom, were thatched with straw. These quickly took fire, and by the violence of the wind, scattered their flames in every part of the camp. The enemy, following up their success with a very loud shout, as if victory were already obtained and secured, began to advance their towers and mantlets, and climb the rampart with ladders. But so great was the courage of our own soldiers, and such their presence of mind, that though they were scorched on all sides and harassed by a vast number of weapons, and were aware that their baggage and their possessions were burning, not only did no one quit the rampart for the purpose of withdrawing from the scene, but scarcely did anyone even look behind, and they all fought most vigorously and most valiantly. This day was by far the most calamitous to our men. It had this result, however, that on that day the largest number of the enemy was wounded and slain, since they had crowded beneath the very rampart, and the hindmost did not afford the foremost a retreat. The flame having abated a little, and a tower having been brought up in a particular place and touching the rampart, the centurions of the 3rd cohort retired from the place in which they were standing, and drew off all their men. They began to call on the enemy by gestures and by words, to enter if they wished, but none of them dared to advance. Then, stones having been cast from every quarter, the enemy were dislodged, and their tower set on fire. Chapter 44. In that legion there were 2 very brave men, centurions, who were now approaching the first ranks. T. Pulfio and L. Varinus. These used to have continual disputes between them which of them should be preferred, and every year used to contend for promotion with the utmost animosity. When the fight was going on most vigorously before the fortifications, Pulfio, one of them, says, "Why do you hesitate, Varinus? Or what better opportunity of signalizing your valor do you seek? This very day shall decide our disputes." When he had uttered these words, he proceeds beyond the fortifications, and rushes on that part of the enemy which appeared the thickest. Nor does Varinus remain within the rampart, but respecting the high opinion of all, follows close after. Then, When an inconsiderable space intervened, Pulfio throws his javelin at the enemy, and pierces one of the multitude who was running up. And while the latter was wounded and slain, the enemy cover him with their shields, and all throw their weapons at the other, and afford him no opportunity of retreating. The shield of Pulfio is pierced, and a javelin is fastened in his belt. This circumstance turns aside his scabbard, and obstructs his right hand when attempting to draw his sword. The enemy crowd around him when thus embarrassed. His rival runs up to him and succors him in this emergency. Immediately, the whole host turn from Pulfio to him, supposing the other to be pierced through by the javelin. Varinus rushes on briskly with his sword and carries on the combat hand to hand, and having slain one man, for a short time drove back the rest. While he urges on too eagerly, slipping into a hollow, he fell. To him, in his turn, when surrounded, Pulfio brings relief, and both having slain a great number, retreat into the fortifications amidst the highest applause. Fortune so dealt with both in this rivalry and conflict, that the one competitor was a succor and a safeguard to the other, nor could it be determined which of the two appeared worthy of being preferred to the other. Chapter 45. In proportion as the attack became daily more formidable and violent, and particularly because, as a great number of the soldiers were exhausted with wounds, the matter had come to a small number of defenders, more frequent letters and messengers were sent to Caesar, a part of which messengers were taken and tortured to death in the sight of our soldiers. There was within our camp a certain Nervian, by name Vertico, born in a distinguished position, who in the beginning of the blockade had deserted to Cicero, and had exhibited his fidelity to him. He persuades his slave, by the hope of freedom and by great rewards, to convey a letter to Caesar. This he carries out, bound about his javelin, and mixing among the Gauls without any suspicion by being a Gaul, he reaches Caesar. From him they received information of the imminent danger of Cicero and the legion.